9 to Golders Green. Please hold on, the bus is about to move.
From the top deck of any bus that crosses the Waterloo Bridge, there is plenty of London skyline to take in. The Houses of Parliament, Big Ben, the London Eye, St Paul's Cathedral, and for better or worse, the Walkie Talkie Building. But recently there's been an addition of sorts, a re-addition perhaps. Perched at the southern end of the bridge, you might have recently noticed some brightly glowing pyramids atop the brutalist art behemoth that is the Hayward Gallery. These beaming triangles of coloured light are actually an art installation by David Batchelor, marking the reopening of the building, which has been undergoing renovation for the past 2 years. And that is what we're going to look at on this week's edition of Culture with Robert Bound. Rob lost his voice interviewing our guests for this programme, so in his absence, you've got me, Holly Fisher, producer of the show. Inside the Hayward, a good deal of sprucing has taken place. The walls are cleaner, brass rails have been buffed, and a new ceiling has been installed. Many of the changes are subtle, but it's a brighter, better building for its sabbatical. And who is adorning these freshly painted walls? Well, that would be the German photographer Andreas Gursky. His large-scale images of contemporary life play with the idea of how pictures are created, and they make for a very good-looking inaugural exhibition. For more on the significance of Gursky as the show opener, I'm joined by editor-at-large of the art newspaper, Jane Morris.
Andreas Gursky, he's a German photographer. He's now in his early 60s. He comes from Düsseldorf, and this is actually very appropriate because Düsseldorf is particularly famous for a group of photographers who emerged in the 80s and 90s around a couple called Berndt and Hilla Becker, who themselves are famous photographers. And if people imagine those photographs where you see repeated pictures of German crumbling factories and water towers and gas holders, that's Berndt and Hilla Becker, a very significant pair, who taught for many, many, many years at the art school in Düsseldorf, which is pretty much the best art school in Germany. So Gursky went there, studied there. He's actually the son of a commercial photographer, which is in itself very interesting because he, in fact, learnt a lot of techniques from his father at a very early age. And to some extent, I think that explains his early technical mastery. But Düsseldorf is also famous for a much earlier art school, which people are less aware of. So when people think of German romantic painters like Caspar David Friedrich, they don't tend to immediately think Düsseldorf. But Düsseldorf was actually the centre of that kind of 19th century romantic landscape painting. And in Gursky, I think we see both influences. We see the influences of that romantic school, although he's a much cooler, more cerebral character, and as well as this kind of tradition of very contemporary photography, which, as I say, was a group of artists who surrounded the Beckers.
And were you surprised when he was announced as the opening for the new Hayward?
Well, in a way I was, because the last show that I saw curated by Ralph Rugoff was The Infinite Mix, which I know Monocle did quite a lot of sort of discussion and programmes around, which was the most fantastic video exhibition, but it was very, very contemporary. So it had some artists like Rachel Rose, who are really only emerging in the last sort of couple of years. Yes, there were some older, more established filmmakers, but it was a very avant-garde, if one can still use that term. It was a very, very avant-garde presentation. And Gursky interested me because he is still the most expensive photographer at auction. He is incredibly established. His reputation really was made in the 90s. And if any of the listeners have been to the Tate recently, the Rhine photographs, which he's particularly famous for, which are these kind of grey and green photographs of the Rhine, very, very minimal, almost like an abstract painting. I mean, the Tate's had that in the collection for some time, and it's been on show at Tate Modern on and off over the last few years. So he seemed to me perhaps a surprisingly establishment figure until I thought about it. And I thought, well, the Hayward is all about this kind of very strong, brutalist architecture. Gursky's had an ongoing interest. That's one of the strands of interest in his work. And one of the great photographs in this exhibition is, in fact, of the Paris Montparnasse council estate, which is the biggest, I think, council block of flats in Paris. It has 750 flats in it. So Gursky has this interest with architecture and how architecture controls us, and whether architecture is democratizing or whether it's homogenizing or even, you know, it's controlling. And the more I thought about that, and then I thought also it's a good idea perhaps to kick off your program with a really, really big figure. And most people in the UK will not have had a chance to see, really, this is some of the very best of Gursky's work, all in one place together.
And a lot of the pictures in this exhibition they fall within the top 10 most expensive photographs in the world. What is it about his work that makes him sell so well?
I think that's a very interesting question. I think he has that very magic combination of serious artistic credibility. He was definitely taking photography in a new direction, as I say, as he started to emerge in the 80s and 90s. And to my taste, and this is very much personal taste, but to my taste, it is his work from the 90s that I like the best. So he establishes this critical reputation. He does look back to a slightly earlier generation. He does look back to people like Stephen Shaw and Jeff Wall, artists who are playing with what photography really means and what its relationship to painting is, and really underscoring that idea that the photograph is not a picture of reality. It's a construct in itself. So I think Gursky has the kind of intellectual chops, if you like, but he also makes these really big scale monumental photographs. And I think he was one of the people that says photography is important. It's hard to remember this, but it wasn't that long ago that people would write articles saying, is photography even an art form? The Tate didn't get a photography curator, I think, until 2008, something like that. So he is one of the first people to make these large monumental photographs. And it's as if he's saying, look, photography is as important as painting, and it is an art form like painting. And these are not real. I mean, one of the things that is most noticeable about Gursky, and it's particularly interesting when you realise that, you know, in the 90s, he had very limited digital technology. He did have some, but, you know, it was very difficult to use. He's making these photographs that are really, really, really high resolution. People often use the word dizzying. I don't like the word dizzying. I don't think they're dizzying. I think there's something very intense about them because of this pin sharp resolution. But the other thing is, he often takes the pictures from at least two standpoints and then collages them together, although you can't see it's collaged. And that means that every single bit of the photograph is in focus. And that obviously isn't possible with normal camera lenses, even the very, very best ones. Younger visitors who are more used to, I guess, digital technology might not find this so surprising. But as I say, I think when you first saw those in the 90s, they were very kind of wow.
Going back to his intellectual chops that you were talking about earlier, he's very interested in people and civilization. And he often depicts people putting lots of effort into things, whether it's people on the trade floor, people in a factory or making products for IKEA, or even people dancing the night away into the early hours or cycling up a mountain as part of the Tour de France. How do you think he wants to depict civilization in his photographs?
Well, I think he's very interested in the idea that space is a construct, and that that construct both constrains us and reveals systems, if you like. So when I look at his work, I think about systems a lot. He made this breakthrough photograph again, I think it was the late 90s, and it's a photograph of the harbour at the port at Salerno. And when you look at it, you've got the container ships looking like blocks. You've got the containers themselves, you've got housing, and everything is repeating this sort of block structure. And he seems to be saying that there's a system, or he's trying to reveal a system of control. It's very light touch sometimes. I mean, I remember seeing these trading floor photographs at Aucquier & Wasore's Venice. And that was supposed to be a critique of capitalism. And yet, when you saw Gursky's photographs, they're so beautiful and so exuberant looking and so lovely composition and great colours. And it's this incredibly all over mad trading floor composition that looks like a Jackson Pollock, except it's people. And it's in the days when, you know, people were shouting with their, you know, their ticker tapes and their cards. It's before the in days of computerised trading. And yet, it is a critique of capitalism. It is showing how the market has made people behave in a particular way. And I think you see that again and again in his work. It's very cool. It's apparently neutral. I don't think he is neutral, but it's apparently neutral. He's not sticking it right in your face. But as I say, I think a lot of it is about the way capitalism forces certain kinds of behaviour. And there's two works that are not put together, but there's two works in the show, very interesting. One is the famous 99 cent, which is a picture of supermarket shelves, and it shows all the products all neatly lined up. And it's a fantastic looking thing, but it's telling you how food is commodified and products are commodified and sold to us. And then later on, there's a picture of the Amazon warehouse. And now everything is jumbled up because Amazon doesn't group its products by what kind of thing it is. They've got their own codes, and it doesn't matter what order they go into the factory.
Sort of books next to golf clubs, next exactly. to anything, isn't it?
And what he's really talking about is a completely changed system of trading. So I think, is he interested in people? It's interesting. He never makes portraits. There's one, I didn't like it that much, to be frank. There's one sort of self-portrait in the exhibition. He doesn't make portraits of individuals. He shows people, I think, as part of a system.
Speaking of some of the pictures that you were just referencing there, like the ones on the trade floor, the way that this show has been curated is that those pictures aren't together. So the Amazon picture is nowhere near the picture of the shop, and the two trade, the Chicago and the Tokyo photographs of the trade floor are kept separate as well. It must have been very tempting to put them all together.
Yes.
Do you think that it's more successful in placing those apart through the exhibition?
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because I think the exhibition is broadly chronological, isn't it? But it's kind of themes and chronologies. I think it would have been tempting to put them together. Would I have put them together? I don't know. Maybe you'd have had to try it out and see how it works. I think perhaps the curators might have felt that the impact of the two photographs would be diluted if they were right next to each other. I don't know. I mean, I think, as I say, it's a very good sort of walk through his kind of main themes and chronology. And I think they do look great in the building. I mean, it's a big concrete building and these beautiful, shiny surface, but quite, as I say, cool, neutral looking pictures do fit very well with it. No, I was okay with it. I was okay with it. Yeah, maybe I'd have liked them together, but, you know, perhaps that's my desire for a different kind of order.
As Jane and I mentioned, the man behind the Hayward and the curation of the Andreas Gursky show is director Ralph Rogoff. Last week, Rob caught up with Rogoff at the reopening to talk about his choice of Gursky to christen the Refresh Gallery.
The big change cosmetically in the gallery is the upper gallery is where we've raised the ceilings and there's lots of natural light coming in now from 66 different roof lights. And it's a sort of, it's clarified the architecture of the Hayward, which is a wonderful, adventurous, bold building. You definitely know you're in architecture when you're in the gallery. You're not in a neutral white cube. But it got a little fuzzy around the edges. So now it's been spruced up so that it's got a precision which goes beautifully with the kind of formal precision and the inventiveness also in Andreas's work. So he was saying the other day that actually some of his pictures have never looked as good as they do in this space. And I think it's a fascinating thing about art, but it really can change its character depending on how it's shown and where it's shown and how it's lit. And so I think we now have a stage, a platform, a showcase for artists that can really make their work look better than it's looked anywhere else.
And when people engage with the Hayward Gallery as artists, I wonder if they have butterflies in their stomach sometimes, because, as you say, it is not a neutral white cube. There is something imposing about the architecture and the inside of the building as well, in which people have to hang their works. How do those negotiations work between you and the artists?
Well, I think some artists like to have something to bounce off of. That friction really spurs creativity. And I think those artists who we work with who have that attitude, I really think almost all good artists have that attitude, they love working in the Hayward because it poses a set of puzzles they have to work out. You know, if they just are showing their room, their work in a kind of neutral white cube type of space, there's no challenge there. There's nothing they can do to make that space feel different, to make it enhance the work in some way, to amplify your encounter with it. But when they come into the Hayward, they realize, okay, I'm going to use this space. It's another tool, really, in their own artistic kit.
And it's the 50th anniversary of the Hayward this year as well, 50th birthday maybe. Is it like resetting the kind of odometer on your motor car, that you can actually, you're on a fresh journey here, the building's been spruced, you've got more natural light. Does it feel like you're going on a new journey rather than continuing an old one?
Well, no, I think it definitely feels like a continuation. I wouldn't want to use the resetting the odometer of meeting, which sounds like a dodgy practice if you're selling a used car. But I think, you know, it's more like you've just got a valve job on your car and it's complete, you know, it can drive another 200,000 miles and the engine is now purring in a way it hasn't done in a long time. I mean, it's just very exciting to have this kind of luminous, spacious gallery that has possibilities we're not even touching yet in this show, and to see what artists do with it. I'm already curious about what's going to happen with the next show here by the artist Lee Bull, who's a sculptor, and we'll use the spaces in a completely different way.
We've also got the outside terraces, which were originally designed for sculptures, I think. I mean, these are going to be, I know you can't let too many cats out of the bag, but you're going to use the space in a very different way for the next show here.
We will. We'll open up all the windows upstairs. All the terraces will be open. There'll be work outside. There'll be work actually hanging from the outside of the building. So that'll be the actual 50th anniversary moment. So the Hayward's going to be looking like it's ready to go out at night.
Well, it's looked pretty good, actually. Driving over Waterloo Bridge nightly and seeing that wonderful work, David Batchelor's work, and seeing the pyramids lit up, it's looked fancy for a while now, Ralph.
Well, no, David, thanks to David Batchelor and this wonderful piece he made called 60-Minute Spectrum, which turns the 66 pyramid lights on the Hayward takes them through the color spectrum over the course of an hour. So when I see it's purple, I know we're running to the end of the hour. Yeah, you can really set your watch more or less by it. And this has given the Hayward this sort of beautiful jewel-like crown, which has been great as a sign that we're ready to open again and we're back in action.
And going back to the Gursky show, which looks so wonderful in the gallery spaces here this week, there's a synergy, obviously, as we said, between the building and the work. There are a lot of contemporary questions raised by this. We see photography as truth. And of course, Gursky's images kind of mess around with that. They're doctored, they're interesting things. This throws up a lot of questions about the idea of truth, the idea of photography as reportage and all the rest of it. You must have had some pretty fantastic conversations with Andreas putting this show together, or maybe he lets the work do the talking. Well, can you let us into a little bit of the backstage magic behind this show?
Well, I think Andreas is a very intuitive artist who has a profound sense of the possibilities of what pictures can be, how they can behave, how they can make us look at them. He once said to me that photographs are much more intelligent than we are. And when you look at his photographs, I think that's easy to understand what he's talking about, because there's so much more information there than we can actually process. I mean, it's funny, the human eye can process, I think, a 14 megapixel image. These are probably thousands of megapixels. And so you can spend a long time looking at them, seeing things that you couldn't see with your naked eye, but then trying to understand how they're put together, what makes that image different, what it's about besides just the thing it's showing you, because his pictures almost all work on a metaphorical level of some kind. That's a slow process. I mean, there's still a new picture he finished just at the beginning of January that haunts me, and something is stirring some thought around in my brain that hasn't quite come out yet. And it's like having a tooth that's wiggling, and sooner or later, I think I'll get to the bottom of it. But there's something going on in that image that I find slightly, it's creating some little whirlpool of my brain that I'm trying to get to the bottom of.
It's nice that we've met a more intelligent life form, and it's a photograph in your gallery here. That's good stuff.
That's great.
When do you like to look at it? Obviously, we're here today, and it's wonderful to have people walking around the space, as handsome as it looks, purely architectural and purely artistic. But when is a good time for you to walk around the gallery? We have a fantasy of gallery directors walking around night at the museum and all that sort of stuff. When's the best time for you to walk around?
You want to walk around at midnight in someone else's museum, but so you can actually see the pictures you don't know so well. But in your museum, the best time is to walk around when people are there, because the most interesting thing is to see how people are, what the nature of their encounter is. How are they talking to each other about what they're looking at? What's catching their attention? What are they walking right by as if it doesn't exist? And, you know, are they reading the wall labels or ignoring them? What's their experience? So that's really what's the most interesting thing to me.
What's the view? I know. You walk to work, or quite a lot of the way to work, Ralph. What's your sort of favourite view of this museum in its kind of fresh, cleaned up state?
Well, you know, the outside of the building we never got to clean, and it's got a nice patina of time on it that actually I think developed quite early on in the building's history. But for me, the best. I mean, I love seeing it from Waterloo Bridge, and especially now because you can see through the windows into this beautiful new cafe that we've just designed that's on the upper level next to our Dan Graham Pavilion. But architecturally, I'm struck by the view coming from Waterloo Station, where you get to see two sides of the Hayward and a terrace opening out to you. Because from that view, there are about 18 different angles of the building, different facades that are kind of reacting to each other. It's almost like some kind of cubist collage, and it all somehow gels into a whole that makes sense. And that to me is an amazing feat of architecture and design.
So what does it take to restructure and preserve a well-loved art gallery? Richard Battai, an associate at Fylde and Clegg Bradley Studios, is one of the brains behind the renovation, and he tells Rob about the integral nuances of the architecture in all the nooks and crannies of the building that you might not have noticed.
Richard, thank you very much for your time today. Now the Hayward Gallery is full of people. Is your job here done? What's it like seeing it finally full of journalists and visitors wandering around asking questions and looking at the artworks?
It's a very nice letting go. It's something that is very hard. I think the first time you do it as an architect, you kind of cry your tears and you work really incredibly hard over something and you labour over every single detail, and then someone comes along and nails something to something you would never intended them to do, and it can be quite painful. But after the first shock of that happening to you, I think you quite quickly, hopefully, you realise that actually it's not your building, it's somebody else's building, and hopefully you've made it for them to do what they want to do in it, especially with Southbank Centre and their... the myriad of things that they will then do with their spaces, both the Hayward Gallery and later the concert hall. So actually I think it becomes a joy. Initially it's a horrible shock, and then you realise this is why we bothered. We bothered to do all this work so that other people then had a space to do what they need to do in it, whether that's a room for someone to sleep in or an art gallery, and which is for the installation of art, and it will come in many shapes, many forms. Some of it will not be to my taste, but it will all be great. And that's something you need to realise, I think, as an architect, that you should just let go and be overjoyed, especially to hear today, to hear how happy Southbank Centre are with how the building's been delivered. To now see what they get to do with it is the next part of the joy. And actually to not have to worry about it. I can come to the next show and just enjoy, and it should be a delight.
And a lot of people have talked about the preponderance of natural light that was so sorely missing with those funny old roof lights that were part of the original design. The pyramids are back with a vengeance, thanks to you and your colleagues. Is this the thing that you're sort of proudest of in here, and being able to sort of do what the original plan was and kind of finally set it free?
I think that was the great challenge, and is the obvious great success, and it does seem to have been a great success. We're very pleased with how it's come out. It is sort of how we imagined it, but always there's a degree of, not uncertainty, but you want to see it, to be sure, and we had a great process of mock-ups which really helped get it right. Whether that's the greatest thing we've done, in some ways, all the bits you can't see and that you can't see them are as important, and also that it still looks like the Hayward Gallery, particularly downstairs where we've we haven't done nothing, but you could argue that we've done nothing, and some of the reviews have said, well, it's barely changed and you wouldn't notice. And that's a success, and it should be part of a refurbishment project and a restoration. You know, if we were doing St. Paul's Cathedral, no one would be horrified that you shut it for 2 years and it came back looking like itself, but cleaner. That way, it's a great success. And so the pyramids, great, great challenge and a very obvious success. And all the hidden bits, I think, are something to be equally pleased that you can't tell what we've done, I suppose.
Oh, well, in that case, let a little bit of daylight in upon magic, Richard, and tell us about your favourite piece of subtle ducting or something that is here that you is your particular favourite thing that no one might ever notice. Let's get the architect's eye view on this.
There's a bit of damaged floor in the gallery we're standing in that you won't know we fixed, and I think that's a great thing. I'm also very overjoyed, I suppose, that we succeeded in some of our small discussions with the way the fire systems of the building are, so you can't really see most of the fire call points. They're there where they need to be, the galleries will always be safe, and there's no question about that, but we haven't got lots of red boxes on the wall for you to break the glass in, and it seems like a very trivial thing. Achieving it has been a huge amount of work, particularly by some of my colleague Chris, who worked very hard to persuade people that actually it's all fine, not to see this everywhere. So it's things like not being able to see the break glass on the wall upstairs is actually quite a satisfying moment.
I'm wondering around it now, possibly being mistaken for a punter as well, is perhaps one of the great joys of walking around it. Tell us about one of your sort of favourite vistas in here. It can be anywhere. You can be walking up the staircase, it can even be backstairs, but what's one of your favourite parts of the gallery, whether that you've worked on that bit or not?
I said to somebody else yesterday, I really like the view from the top deck of a number 68 going south over Waterloo Bridge, particularly at night, to see the David Batchelor installation on the pyramids, which I suppose is a surprise. We knew you could illuminate the pyramids. It was very obvious it could be done, and it's been done very well. And to see that installation, the Hayward Gallery, being the Hayward Gallery, it looks like the Hayward Gallery. We've not changed how it really feels from the top of the bus. I used to get the bus before, I still will get the bus. But that's a great view for me, to see the outside going past. Also, I really like lying on the floor upstairs with my head underneath the middle of a pyramid, because I'm a bit of a kind of architect and we like things that line up, and to watch the sky through a pyramid on the roof. And maybe how calming that is to do is a surprise.
How does it feel today, by the way? It's been an emotional day for artist, curator, architect alike.
Yes, it's been great. I mean, it's great, as we were saying earlier, to build the building for your client to then do what they need to do in it is really what you should be doing, and why handing it over to them shouldn't be a shock, and when they do something you weren't expecting shouldn't be a shock. To have them say how pleased they are with the works, it is emotional. It's a great feeling to think, actually, we worked very hard, 5 years, long time, and it was good. I mean, it'd be terrible to work so hard and to not have a client who was happy with what you've done. So that's been great.
And it's one of those moments you can sit on the number 68 bus for the rest of your career and look across the Hayward and tell whoever's sitting next to you that you kept it beautiful rather than changing it in any way. There's something very powerful in that, perhaps.
I think so, yeah. It's the privilege of working on such a prominent building in such a prominent place. I mean, the buildings are iconic and deservedly so, and many buildings probably get called that and possibly aren't in such a strong way. So, yeah, a real privilege to be involved in a project on such great buildings and to have them in such an obvious location. And there's more than just the 68 bus, in fact. So.
And that brings us to the end of this week's episode. Andrea Skursky is on show at the Hayward Gallery until the 22nd of April and is well worth paying a visit. Culture with Robert Bound will be back next week with a trip to Cardiff's National Museum for the latest exhibition by Icelandic artist Ragnar Kjartansson. But for now, thanks for tuning in.